I'm so excited about this series. Now, I'm just going to let you know up front, this is a very unique series. So part of my desire is to be able to apply God's word into our life practically. So today's message is going to be really geared towards Christians. I want you to understand, it's coming your direction. So just kind of a reminder, the next few weeks we're going to be talking about how basically technology affects our families, our culture, our society. I want you in your mind to go back 10 years. Go back 10 years. Okay? Can you picture where you're at 10 years ago? Can you picture your age? Can you picture your job? Can you picture life? Can you picture what it's like to be an adult? Brad, how old were you 10 years ago? 17 years old. I want you to picture back when you're 17, okay? So with that in mind, all right, here's the context. You ready? Imagine a world where Twitter was actually a sound that a bird makes outside your window. Remember that? Imagine a world where the cloud is actually a white fluffy thing that sometimes gives rain, okay? Imagine a world where an application is something that a senior fills out so they can go to college. Imagine a world where Skype is a typo. Can you go back that far? Okay. Imagine a world where 4G is describing where you parked your car at the airport. Imagine a world that when you say that you're LinkedIn, it would actually imply that you're in prison. Okay. Can you go back 10 years ago? That was you and I 10 years ago. It's incredible the rate that technology affects our life on an everyday basis. Our world makes such incredible technological advances, and this series is not about us being anti-technology. I want you to hear that up front. But it is about, as disciples of Christ, how we use wisdom to basically allow those areas of technology to affect our lives. So here, think back about 20 years ago. Imagine a world where Amazon was actually a river in South America. Do you remember that? Here's one. Imagine a world where when your car breaks down on the freeway, you're stuck until somebody comes and gives you a ride, and they take you to a payphone. Do you remember the payphone? Imagine a world where dinner at a restaurant, there's no rings, there's no beeps, there's just people talking. See, that's technology about 20 years ago. You see, from the beginning of history, technological advances continue. We can go way back to when the wheel was invented, when gunpowder was invented, and a big invention came, and then little things would trickle in, but it didn't fire off like it does even today. Historians say that from 1650 to 1850 was the biggest surge of inventions and technological advances in the world. At that time, all of a sudden, there was transit shipping. Ships would move cargo from continent to continent, just on the heels of the printing press and printing books. Why is my phone talking to me? Siri just told me to sit down and shut up. I don't appreciate that. So, exactly. But what happens is with these advances, we think that they're going to be like the printing press. For the first time, all of a sudden, spoken word was now recorded so that it could be shared with thousands of people for educational purposes. You go back to, from 1650 to 1850, there was a 200-year chunk where these advances were just firing off. But they weren't as fast as it was the next 100 years, from 1850 to 1950. There was advances in photography and telephone and communication. Can you imagine for the first time someone saying, I'm going to be in this room and I'm going to talk to someone that is not in this room? How incredible that would have been for the very first time. So from 1950 to current, the advances that happen. They're just firing off. I was talking with my dad. My dad is 78 years old, and we were talking about the advances that's happened during his lifetime. He says it's mind-boggling. Daily advances in televisions, computer, cell phones, you have Wi-Fi, we have GPS maps. Last night, I walk into my living room and I say, Alexa, turn off the TV. And the TV went off. We're talking out loud, we're giving voice commands. So as we continue to embrace technology, we bring screens, we bring phones, we bring tablets into our lives. And we ask very few questions of how it's going to change the dynamics of our household or change the dynamics of how we live. But you see, it always hasn't been that way. Back when Leonardo da Vinci, after his death, he was known for being cutting edge, but they found blueprints after blueprints of inventions that he had never actually brought into this world. One of them being the submarine, and his cautiousness was, I'm not sure how this is going to affect society, good or bad. Socrates, if you've heard that name in philosophy, Socrates never wrote anything down. Anything you read about Socrates was because someone else wrote it down. He is known for when the pen, the writing pen came out, it was called the mourning of the pen. He began to be sad. And the reason he was sad is he feared that if you could write things down, how is this going to affect human memory? How will people exchange information? What will this do to the human brain? Won't it kind of subside as well? Both of these men, Da Vinci and Socrates, were aware of how technology can change people and alter their life, good or bad. So we understand how quickly technology changes, but we fail to understand how it changes us. You see, every screen that you bring into your home, into your life, it causes a sense of isolation, a disconnect from the people around you. I can go back. I can remember when I was a kid, we had one TV in the house. How many can remember back that far? Come on, one TV. We had one TV, and it was on this console thing that had a record player on one end. Are you with me? And so when it was time for the TV to be changed, the TV channel, there was no remote. You know what there was in the room? Hey, Brian, go change it to channel 4. No, channel 6. Okay, turn the volume up. I was the channel remote changer. That's what my job was. And my brother was 4 years younger than me, and he played the dumb kid. I don't know how to do it, Dad. Brian, get up and change the channel. And he knew how to. How difficult was that? Matter of fact, there were times when I thought, you know, maybe that's the only reason Mom and Dad had me, because they wanted somebody to change the channel on TV. Today, if you did a quick tally, though, the number of screens that you have in your house is incredible. I don't care what age you are, whether it be a phone, a tablet, a security panel on your wall. It's amazing. It's just, they're in our lives like never before. And every time we're on one of those screens, we tend to be a little more isolated. It was just a couple of months ago that I was out with my wife, and we're at a restaurant, family of four, and there's a family just across the row there, and they're all having a nice family dinner, and every single one of them was submerged in their phone. There was no conversation going on. You see, we understand how quickly technology changes us, but we fail to understand how quickly technology changes, but we fail to see how it changes us. We live in a world where we've never been more connected than we are, but we've also never been as isolated. We're able to do so much more, though, with technology. It's incredible the amount of things we get done. You can get on your phone. I started thinking about that. From my phone, I can tell you what the weather is. I can change my bank account. I can adjust the thermostats in this room. I can talk to my children in a different state. It's just, I can get a ton of stuff done. And when you look at our world has said we want to do more things and faster. Am I right? Do you remember when they had the first drive-through, how unique that was? That you could stay in your vehicle? Isn't that kind of cool? And you could drive up to McDonald's, was the first place I remember, and you would order, and then that you would go to the window, and they'd bring it to the window. Do you remember that? But that's not fast enough. We got more stuff to do. So now we've got drive-through restaurants. We've got 2 and 3 lanes. We've got people outside. They're predicting what you're going to order before you order it. It's just because we're productive. You can get on your phone, place an order, and then just show up and pick up the bag of food. See, that's technology. There are huge advantages to us. But have you ever noticed in our society that because we try to produce so much more, if you talk with anybody, hey, how you doing? You're going to hear this response. Oh, I'm tired. I'm tired. How's things going? Oh, I'm busy, man. I'm just super busy. Really, I'm tired and busy. I'm busy and tired. You know, it's no wonder that on every other corner in our city, there's a Starbucks on the corner that's going to dispense its gallon of caffeine just so you could feel a bit better and have a little more energy. That's the world we live in. In 1997, the survey of 9 to 11-year-olds, they asked the kids, list your top values. 97, it's 20-plus years ago. Coming in at number 16 was, for a child, fame. I'd like to be famous. Fast forward to 2017, fame came in at number one. We got the Justin Biebers, we got the Kardashians, the people that are well known. Fame is what I want. YouTube has affected our world. So this series, again, it's not about being anti-technology. It's about, as disciples of Christ, we understand about using wisdom in the unique world in which we live in right now. I want you to turn in your Bibles to the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter number one, we're going to begin reading. Today, Christians, this is going to be a reminder. It's going to be a reminder. And I can tell you that already this morning, I've been reminded, and I'll share that in just a second. Genesis chapter number one, we begin reading. The beginning of the world is where we read from the story, is how the world began, the creation of the world. So Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 reads this way. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. When you read Genesis chapter number 1, you're going to find out that after this creation, after God is creating the world, he begins giving responsibilities and instructions to his creation. He tells the birds in the air, your job is to fly. I want you to fly, and I want you to reproduce after your own kind, but you get to fly. I want you just to kind of fill this area. He says to the fish, I want you to swim, and I want you to reproduce. I want you to make more fish, but your job, fish, is to swim. He says to the creatures on the ground, I want you to move along the ground. That's your job, is just to move. And so in doing so, he comes to mankind. And he doesn't say to mankind, I want you to swim, I want you to fly, I want you to move along the ground. He gives mankind a unique command. He says in verse number 28, we have the responsibility to subdue and have dominion over it. The God's creation that he's just done the last few days, he says, those fish and the birds and the animals, and there, I want you to subdue it. I want you to make it subject to your power. You rule, you control it. You are to have dominion over it. God says, I'm God, and I'm over everything, but mankind, you're over everything else. That's your job. So in Genesis chapter number 2, Adam takes this and he begins naming the animals because that's his job, is to manage creation. You see, it looks something like this. The God, the creator, has dominion over you and me. He's in charge. Man has dominion over the rest of the creation. It is in subjection to us. But when this hierarchy gets flipped, when all of a sudden the world has dominion and rule and become subject to its dominance, things get messed up pretty quick. At any time, if Adam and Eve said, we don't just want dominion over the earth, we essentially want to be like God, everything is going to fall apart. And that's exactly what happened in Genesis chapter number 3. Genesis chapter number 3, Adam decides that he wants to be as God, and he disobeys the command of God who is in dominion over him. You see, whenever you and I get this hierarchy of dominion flipped, everything goes wrong. Because I believe, as an example in Genesis, everything operates best when we surrender to the way God set that up. So I want that to be kind of the bottom line in your head this morning. So when we understand, when humans get addicted to things on the earth and they let those addictions have control over them, have dominion over them, that's the hierarchy that's getting flipped. That's God creating wonderful things for you and I to enjoy, but instead they control us. They control our actions. If you've ever been associated with Alcoholics Anonymous, they get this. They say the first step is admitting that you are powerless over alcohol. It has dominion over you. That's the first step, is to recognize that. And then the second step is simply this. You need to surrender to a higher power. We need to surrender our life to God. So in Genesis chapter number 3, the hierarchy is flipped. Adam and Eve sinned. They don't want to be the servant. They say to God, we don't want to be where we're at. We want to be in your seat, which is really kind of ironic. That's basically what salvation is about. It's saying, God, you can have your seat back because I'm not doing very good in my life right now. I need you to be in control of my life. But one of the hardest obstacles of coming to faith isn't admitting that God is actually God. It's admitting that you're not God. So even after sin, though, God never revokes man's ability to have dominion over the earth. He never takes that responsibility away. He says it's going to be messy, it's going to be difficult, it's going to be hard. So I want to take you in Genesis over a story. In the Old Testament scriptures, the Hebrew scripture, it recounts story after story of mankind attempting to wrestle and reestablish this dominance over the hierarchy. So turn, if you would, over to Genesis chapter number 10, just a few chapters over. Genesis chapter number 10. We begin reading in verse number 8. One of my favorite names in the entire Bible. Here we go, ready? Genesis chapter number 10, verse 8. Now Cush was the father of Nimrod. And Nimrod said, are you serious, Dad? That's the name you're giving me, Nimrod? Nimrod became a mighty warrior on the earth. How many of you, in all honesty, have ever called somebody a Nimrod? Raise your hand. You've used the word. Come on, okay? See, I started thinking, where did that get its negative connotation from? Nimrod. Because here it says that Nimrod, he became a mighty warrior, and a different version, a mighty hunter. And I thought, well, so where does Nimrod come from? So here's a picture of what Nimrod looks like. This is a copper statue of this mighty, gallant warrior. So I started doing a little research, Nimrod, because I've heard that. My dad used to use that word. Son, quit being a Nimrod. Nimrod, what's a Nimrod? It's not a good name. Don't be a Nimrod. I'd never heard that before. So I did a little research. Do you know when Nimrod became famous in our culture? Okay, back in the 1940s, there was a cartoon called Bugs Bunny. Seen it? Okay. Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck were, of course, messing with Elmer Fudd. And Bugs Bunny said in one of those episodes, because Elmer Fudd was hunting the wabbit, you remember this, okay? Bugs Bunny calls Elmer Fudd a Nimrod. And I thought, they had no idea that that was a Bible story. Well, apparently they did. So Nimrod, if you called anybody a Nimrod, so today, somebody who is not, we're going to find out what, you have permission today to call them a Nimrod. A little bit later on in context, okay? But let's look at verse number 9. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And that is why he said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. Now the first centers of this kingdom were in Babylon. They were in Uruk. They were in Akkad, in Calneh, and also in Shinar. Nimrod was this incredible, aggressive, man of a man's leader at that particular time. He was looked up to. He was feared. He was, because he was the bad boy of that particular time. So this is the setting that talks to us about the kingdoms. Turn over one chapter to chapter number 11. Look at the very first verse with me, okay? Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. And as people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. And they said to each other, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. and tar for mortar. My uncle and my cousin, my aunt and uncle and my cousins are on a farm in Rogersville, Missouri. And I remember one summer, we used to go out there for a week and stay with my cousins. And Larry said, "We're going to build a fence." Sound kind of industrious? A building a fence. Ooh, almost blocked the wrong side. "We're going to build a fence." But when my Uncle Larry said, "Build a fence," this was the type of fence that he was talking about. It was a rock fence. It was a rock wall. So what he wanted us to do was to collect the rocks that were in the field and carry them to the side of the property and begin stacking them as to make a fence. Now, I don't know if you've ever stacked rocks like that. They just don't stick together. You know what I'm talking about? You carry them. It's amazing how heavy these things are, but you move it over and you set it on top and you got to kind of resituate it. And because of its shape, it was kind of lopsided. They wouldn't stick together. It's very difficult. So with that thought in mind, early construction, as we find out, this was very common. They would take rocks from the field and they would build things. Up until we read in Genesis chapter number 11, there is new technology in Genesis chapter number 11. This new technology is called a brick. A brick. They said, what we're going to do with our new technology is we are going to fashion this stone, and we are going to make our own stone, stone enough that we can go ahead and it's flat, and we can stack it. And because of that, we can put mortar in between it. And as we put mortar into it, we can build this thing, and we can go higher and higher and higher, and they would begin to build it, and it's amazing what it would do. So because of this new technology, it was able to build a sturdier, stronger, storms could outlast this because they were together. So what happens in verse number 4? Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered all over the earth." You see, Nimrod was attempting to flip the hierarchy and become God. He says, the reason that we're going to build this tower is so that we can become like God. We can have access to the heavens. We can be in charge. So I want you to pick up on this. So essentially, at this time, the brick is the iPhone of its day. It was brand new. It was new cutting edge. You mean we can put these bricks together, yes, and then we can fill them with mortar in between, and so that way when the rains hit and the winds blow, it won't move, and you can stack them, and you can make bigger so you can go higher and give them more stability? This was the brick of its day. It was a technological advance in Shinar. But I want you to pick up on this. In this story, though, there is nothing wrong with the brick. God has no problems. He doesn't have a problem with them making brick. He doesn't say, no, don't do that. The issue was what they decided to do with this brick. See, the brick in itself is fantastic. It builds homes. It organizes cities. It's capable of giving stability. But the problem wasn't the brick. It was what they were going to do with the brick. You see, I believe in this day, an age that you and I live in, the issue in our world is not the iPhone. It's not technology. It's what we do with this technology is where we begin to slip up. Technology is neither good nor bad. It's neutral. But when we decide to do something with it, that's when the good and bad comes out. You see, in the day and age in we live in, there is social media left and right. There is things like Facebook. You know, Facebook has wonderful benefits from it. You can connect with friends. You can participate in charitable causes. We even have a Facebook page from our church. But Facebook could also be a negative influence. It can be an exhauster of time. It can monopolize your life. I've heard of numerous situations where women or men got on Facebook to look up old boyfriend, girlfriend, and because of that, disastrous relationships began to surmount, and families were destroyed. You can have a negative response as well. You see, Nimrod was the first person in the Bible to use technology in a poor, destructive way. I believe technology to this day can still mess us up because we can use it in the wrong way. There's nothing wrong with having technology. It's just that the day and age in which we live in, it's distracting. It takes our time. It monopolizes our life. See, I believe it's possible to spend so much time with people not in the room that you ignore the people in the room. So, about 2 weeks ago, I'm in a conversation with an individual in an establishment here in the city, and he's talking with me, and we're having kind of a serious conversation because we were talking about his family, and he was asking me, you know, what should I do? And so he's just into it. All of a sudden, his phone rings. His phone rings. Now, what do you think he did? Just a second. Our conversation stopped. And he says, just a minute, hello? So he starts talking on his phone. It's just me and him. So I don't know that he understood this, but what he was telling me is that you, O'Brien, in this room in which I'm having a conversation with, is not as important as this person who's in a different room who hasn't even got the courtesy to come talk to me where I'm at. To complicate it, it was a salesperson. Wanted to know about some security system that they could have signed up for. And he says, well, no, I'm not interested, but thank you for calling. So he hangs the phone up and he comes back and he starts talking with me. Something like this. Now, where were we? So he completely disengaged from a connection with somebody in the room because he was saying this person was more important. So me personally, that's one of my pet peeves. If you ever call me on my phone and I'm talking to somebody, I'll get to you in just a second, okay? I'm not going to interrupt this conversation. So where were we? Okay, this is where we're at. No. 10 seconds later, the phone rings again. Oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I got to get this. No, you don't. You really don't have to get that. It's my wife. I got to get it, okay? Yeah. I'm talking with Brian. I'm thinking, well, not really talking with Brian, but yeah, you are. You're with Brian. You see, sometimes because of these distractions, they can disconnect us from the people in our lives that are most important to us. So as a result, we exist in rooms, but we're not actually existing because we're absent, because our mind and attention is elsewhere. We're ignoring the people that matter most to us, the people that we love, the people who love us. So here's my thought. As Christians, it is easy for us to allow something like this technology to completely distract us from loved ones, from children, from people we're to have an impact on. Now, I do believe there are some strong benefits of technology. I will tell you one of my favorite inventions that happened to the Gray family. And Renee, you were right there with me. We bought a Nissan Quest van that had a drop-down video screen with wireless headphones. It changed vacation for the Gray family overnight. We could now take long trips, and for 2 hours at a time, my kids sat there, stared, and shut up. It was wonderful. Me and Renee would be in the front of the vehicle, and we'd have conversations, and how do you feel? And we look back at the kids, and there's four zombie boys. Oh, it made traveling on the road so much easier. All the cares of this world were subsided because there's a screen and it's doing stuff and we're going to look at it. And then as soon as that movie was over, headphones up. When we stop it for lunch, I got to go to the bathroom. I mean, okay, so that's why we would buy. So what I would do is I would always buy a trip. I would buy a brand new release of a movie that came out. And my kids were excited about it, Shrek or whatever it was. And then I would go back and buy movies that, like when I was a kid, like Fletch or Caddyshack or Ghostbusters or something like that, and let them watch it. Because I found out that for $5, bargain bin at Walmart gave me 2 hours of complete harmony. It was wonderful. You say, well, that's kind of sad. be honest with you, it is kind of sad. Because we learned real quick as parents that when mommy and daddy are tired, let's just flip on the TV, and there's the babysitter. I don't have to interact with my child when they're doing that. I think it was it Kyle Renee that had stitches at the doctor's office and he was fussing? Yeah, he had a sledding accident. He wiped out, and where did he got? Oh, he had stitches on top. He had a cut on his head, and so they're going to have to give him stitches. Now, parents, if you've ever taken your child to the doctor's office and they say, we have to give your child stitches, that's normally not a good thing because your kid's not going to be very happy. So Kyle is just, he's thrashing around, I don't want this. And I said to the doctor, sir, that TV set right there, if you'll turn that TV set on, things will change for us. He says, but we don't have, I said, just trust me. So Kyle's, and the TV set will turn on, and he went. So the doctor moves in, and he's messing with his head, and he's giving him stitches, and Kyle's thinking, this is great, I get to watch TV. It just amazes me. So what happens, because we do know that works, we have defaulted that, and because we've defaulted that, I believe in 2019, we are one of the most isolated cultures we've ever had. A number of years ago, I talked my dad into buying an iPhone. My dad's 78. My dad at the time was like 75. I said, Dad, you'll like it. It's great. You can, he golfs all the time. You can schedule your tee times. You can check the weather. It's great. Son, I don't want one. He came to my house. I showed him how he could do some stuff. He went back to Arkansas, called me from the AT&T store. Hey, now which one do I want? And he got one. So when you come to my house and my dad is visiting, my dad is doing one of two things. He is either sitting in my chair, which that's a sore spot, with my remote, watching the TV, or he's on his phone on Facebook. How many of you have Facebook on your phone? Okay. Here's my dad on Facebook. He's just scrolling. My mom will be 3 feet from her. She's on Facebook. She's just scrolling. All the rest of us adults are here. Let's talk, Dad, just a second. My mom accidentally is liking things that she should not be liking. Mom, that's a Dos Aggies beer commercial. Don't say that Carla Gray liked it. Listen, you know. But they're just distracted. Now, as I try to poke fun at this, I want you to understand that it's things like this that allow our connected lives to become isolated and disconnected. Do you honestly think that your child wants to be around you so that you can be across the table on your iPad surfing for where you can buy tennis shoes? No, they want interaction. They want conversation. But what happens is we have defaulted by giving them certain things to pacify them, to make it easier on us. Okay, Brian, so how does this fit into Christianity? How does this fit into God? Because what happens is Christians, we get disconnected from a world that needs us and loves us and families that need us and love us. It's incredible how much damage it can do to a family. That's why we need boundaries. It's amazing. I read this stat last week or 2 weeks ago. The number of marriages. Have you ever heard of eHarmony? eHarmony is a dating website that you put your profile in, they match you up, and then you can message them, and then you can start talking online and maybe even date or whatever. The number of marriages that have started on eHarmony is incredible. But I started thinking, I wonder how many marriages and relationships have ended because of online pornography. See, something that could do good stuff, when used wrong, is bad. You see, it's a neutral thing until it's used against God, until it begins to feed an addiction that pulls us farther and farther away from those around us. So I wanted to give you two questions today. Two questions, because we need boundaries, and we need in this room to have realistic conversations. Look up here. Because I guarantee there's people in here in this room that your mate, your children, your parents are going, you need to hear this. Here's the first question. What problem does this device solve? Or what problem does it create? What problem does this device solve, or what does it create? You see, there's sometimes that we have good things happen. Like, I'll give you for instance. When kids are little, and we say, my child is such and such age, I'm going to get them a phone, so that way when I'm picking them up from school, I can talk to them, or I know right where they're at. I can get a hold of them anytime. Yeah, that's a great situation. When I was a kid and I was like in fourth grade, do you know how my dad knew where I was? Brian! And I would respond. But now, on your app, you can pull up the GPS. You can find out where your child is. You can even on some apps find out that your child is driving down Cooper and he's 4 miles over the speed limit. Isn't that incredible? It can be incredible. It can also be sad. Because by introducing this technology to your 8 and 10-year-old, you're also opening a world of darkness and horror when it comes to the temptations and problems that are now in their life. When I was a child, neighborhood kids would go to their friend's dad's bedroom to look at awful magazines, pornographic magazines. And people would say, oh, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that. But now, we'll just give them a phone that gives them data access at any time and say, now be careful. And we think that we're good. It's the exact same thing. Parents, look up here. This is the world in which we live, and it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. Well, Brian, are you against technology? No, I use it all the time. I bought my parents-in-law an Amazon Echo for their TV in Springfield, Missouri. And do you know why I did that? Because I love them, number one, but I got tired of doing tech support from Texas on how they could find out what channel the Waltons were on. So now I say, Mom, Dad, hold your phone up to the TV, and I say, Alexis, switch to Netflix. Alexis, find the Waltons. Alexis, play the episode. And then my mother and father-in-law on the other end go, that's amazing. It just saved me about 45 minutes. Find the input button to go channel up, channel down. Yes, there are fantastic advances. But I'm going to tell you, this will pull you away from your family. So yesterday morning, I get up. It's confession time. Yesterday morning, I get up, and I've got a school project that's due tomorrow by midnight. So I start working on it, and Renee's very, very graciously. She's trying to accommodate me by making breakfast, and so I'm in there. And so I get a notification on my phone. Somebody sent me a message, and so I look at it. So out of curiosity, I hit a button, and the next thing I know, I'm on some videos, and there's some interesting videos, and I'm beginning to watch videos, what turns into like 20 seconds is now turning into 15 minutes, and while my wife is trying to accommodate me by doing something nice for me, and I'm supposed to be doing homework, I'm completely sidetracked, and I'm looking at these videos thinking, so she says out loud, what are you doing? What am I doing? And Renee could be my testify to this. I said, I'm in here. And as I say I'm in here, I know what I've studied this week. That there's nothing wrong with this. But it being neutral, whether it's good or bad, is determined to the person that this hand is attached to. Brian, why do we talk about this in church? I'll tell you why we talk about this in church. Because the relationship that we have between us and God is compromised on so many areas. There are so many distractions in our life. This used to be an accessory. Do you know that? It used to be an accessory. Now it's not. I went to Krispy Kreme this morning to pick up our donuts for the team huddle. I go in the front door because there was a long line, and I'm waiting, and over by the front door, there are two girls, I'm guessing probably about fifth or sixth grade, okay? One of them is this, and one of them is doing this. And the mother says to her, and I don't want to give her name, calls her by name, "Which one do you want?" "I don't care, just get me one, I don't care." And then the other girls, she's looking, and, "Sweetheart, which one do you want?" "I told you, I want regular glaze." And I thought, if I'm the parent of that child, I'm going to smear icing all over your face in just a second. Why do people act that way? I'll tell you why people act that way. The same reason you get distracted by this little thing. It diminishes your lifestyle around that, these distractions. Our government gets it. They say you cannot drive in a school zone while texting. Put the phone down. So we wonder why our kids don't pick up on this kind of stuff. How come my kids are like that? It's probably because they learned it from you. So Brian, why are we talking about being connected? Because I promise you, you're distracted right now in something in your life. There's something pulling you away from God. There's something pulling you away from God. When you can sit 20 minutes and catch all the YouTube videos, or you can actually spend a few times allowing God's word to enter your life through a Bible app or whatever, a book even, what's the choice that we make? Because I guarantee the cute video I saw this morning of the kid pulling a prank on his mom and dad was way more funnier than the book of John. There has to be a connection with us and God. There has to be a connection with us and our family and those around us. So before church last week, our team huddle takes place over here. And before I started, I looked up, and I counted last week, there were 13 people out of 20-plus people that were just basically stuck on their phone right here like this. Brian, are you against that? Look around this room. Look around this room. Look. Not me. Look around the room. There are so many incredible people in this room. But the way that you connect with them is that you get away from the distractions and you become connected. That's how we start. Many of you have little kids that are just vying for your attention, and they want mom and dad, and just a second, go in your room, play. I'm watching something. Or as soon as I get this done, or I've got homework, I've got this report that's due. That's how difficult it is sometimes in the day and age in which we live to become distracted. The second question is do we rule over our devices or do they rule over us? What has dominion over you right now? What has dominion over you? What do you catch yourself gravitating to very quickly? Our desire is not to be anti-technology. Our desire is to live our lives not in subjection to other things, which allows us to be creations of God that understand that there's a world around us that it's so beautiful and relationships are so incredible. We have to be connected.